The Mumbrella Finance Marketing Summit is back in person on August 11, 2022. Don't miss your chance to learn and connect with the most influential thinkers and leaders to discuss and dissect the latest trends across all areas of banking, superannuation, finance, and insurance. The early bird discounts end next Friday, 24th of June. Book now to save $200.
Hello and welcome back to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Callum Jaspin, and today, global creativity and advertising takes focus as industry figureheads from across the world prepare to descend on Cannes. What are some of the trends to come from this year's thought leaders? Then, following a report this morning on data consciousness, you'll hear how Aussies really feel about sharing their personal information with brands. Finally, we catch up with Paramount Chief Sales Officer Rod Prosser about the global network streamlined proposition here in Australia and how it stacks up against its competitors. Joining me for this Mumbrella Cast Global Edition is Acting Deputy Editor Emma Shepherd. Hey, Em.
G'day.
And also joining us today is journalist Kalila Welsh. Hey, Kalila.
Hey, Cal.
Nice to see you both from over here.
Yeah, Carl, we're lucky to have you stationed over in Europe as our correspondent for Cannes Lions, which kicks off next week. It's the first time we've been over at Cannes in a little while, no doubt thanks in part to COVID. What's on the agenda for you while you're over there? How's the weather?
Well, the weather is lovely. I'm currently in sunny London and we'll be heading to Cannes this weekend. As you mentioned, it's the first time we've personally been there in a little while as Mumbrella representing, but also, you know, the event hasn't happened for a few years anyway, so I think it's going to be a little bit of kind of wedding back in for everyone. The week is shaping up to be a pretty busy one, you know, first time for me as well, so I think I'll definitely be jumping between quite a few things, but hoping to catch as much of the action as I can, kind of soak it all in. And as I understand, there'll be a pretty heavy Australian contingent over there as well. So looking forward to seeing some of our industry friends as well. Earlier this week, the first couple of shortlists for the Cannes Lions Award were announced, with Leo Burnett Australia listed in the nominations for the Innovation Lions for its One House to Save Many Work for Suncorp Group. Kalila, you spoke with Andy Ferguson, ECD at Leo's, about the nomination. What did he have to say about that one?
So just for a bit of background first on the campaign, though I'm sure many people are already familiar with it, the agency worked with the housing resilience experts at James Cook University, the CSIRO, and Room 11 Architects to design and test a prototype home that would be fire, flood, and cyclone resistant. And this was kind of off the back of kind of a stream of horrible climate events that we'd had here, you know, with the fires at the end of 2019 ahead of COVID. The process was communicated. So the process of designing the home was communicated through an integrated campaign that included a documentary, which was aired on Channel 9, the earned media coverage that went with that, as well as content on their own channels. So in speaking to Ferguson, he basically said that the team was super proud of the campaign. They were really happy it's being recognized in the innovation categories, especially because innovation itself has become such a buzzword in the industry, but something that is rarely seen in practice. He said that true innovation can take a lot of time, money, trust, and bravery. He said One House had shown them that when you do innovate, it pays off in spades. The project is yielding significant business results for Suncorp and has led to industry-leading insurance products like Build It Back Better. But even more importantly, off the back of the campaign, Ferguson said that the Insurance Council of Australia is aiming to embed resilience into the National Construction Code by 2025. In summing it up, he essentially said that the One House to Save Many was never just about building one house. It was about changing the way that every house is built.
So plenty still to come as we approach the festival, which kicks off next Monday. But I guess based on what we have seen so far, Kalila, from those shortlists that have been published, are we seeing any preliminary trends starting to emerge amongst this year's nominees?
Yeah, so just from the first look, there are a few things that kind of emerging out of what we've seen so far. So the first three categories to be announced were the Innovation Lions, which Leos were nominated for, which celebrate groundbreaking innovation, technology, and problem solving. The Titanium Lions, celebrating game-changing creativity. And Glass, the Lion for Change, which celebrates culture-shifting creativity. Overarchingly from these three categories, the biggest trends that I've noticed in the shortlisted candidates so far is a real commitment to social progress. So an overwhelming number of the work put forward for recognition is anchored in social good across a number of topical issues, including climate change, gender equality and women's issues, as well as anti-racism. I also noticed a number of campaigns that were raising awareness or improving accessibility for people with a disability, including a campaign from Virgin called Dyslexic Thinking from FCB Inferno London, and another one from Channel 4 called Superhuman, which was created by 4 Creative London, as well as a number of others. Of course, one of the shortlisted categories, Glass, does recognise this kind of, you know, culture shifting work. But I do think it's also more broadly evidence of shifting expectations of brands to be progressing society and to be seen to be engaging in social good. In terms of who's being nominated, of the nominations so far, and again, you know, there are many more to be announced, but there's a few agencies that have popped up a couple of times, one being Ogilvy. Ogilvy London has been nominated twice, once for its work for Dove and another piece for Mayor of London, which were both shortlisted under the Glass category. And we've also seen another one from Ogilvy from their Athens office. VML, Y&R have also been nominated a few times, with their Mumbai office having received multiple nominations, as well as one for their Mexico office too.
Yeah, interesting that continues to sort of be a focus of the work this year. I remember we had Squarespace's creative director on the podcast last year, and he was sort of reflecting on the work that he had seen judging at Cannes over the year prior, which was, you know, had a big focus on that sort of social progression work, as you mentioned there. Clearly, it's been a pretty, busy 2 years on that front. But he also kind of mentioned that, there wasn't very much fun work coming out from what he was seeing. So hopefully there's a little bit of that scattered through the work this year as well. So yes, boots on the ground for Mumbrella at Cannes this year. If you're going to be there as well, please do give us a shout. Anyway, coming up next, Australians have their say on sharing their personal data. Dentsu has launched its latest data consciousness project report examining how consumers feel about businesses accessing and leveraging their personal data. The report surveyed around 20,000 people across 14 countries in the Asia Pacific region, including 3,900 Australians, where it looked at trust, transparency, and the value exchange of data. Similarly, the study highlighted growing concerns around privacy and security, particularly towards new technologies and the development of the metaverse. Em, you actually had a bit more of an in-depth chat with Christine McKinnon, Dentsu Solutions Head of Intelligence for Australia and New Zealand. What were some of the more localized takeaways from the report, and what can we apply this to mean for brands?
I did, and she told me that Australians and New Zealanders are more protective over human values when we consider data and tech. She said that represents a great challenge for brands in the ANZ region, because they are going to have to possibly work a lot harder to deepen database relationships, create genuinely enriching experiences, and hold themselves to higher standards in terms of data-orientated behaviour. I think we can see clearly over the 5 years that Dentsu has been studying this, that there has been growing appreciation for personalisation when, you know, delivering highly desired benefits via a trusted partner. I think brands need to have the courage to step out from behind their T&Cs and make their offering highly relevant and trusted. So really interesting insights from her.
Yeah, and you also had weigh-ins from other industry figureheads, including IAB Australia's CEO, Gay LeRoy, and Yahoo's head of data for APAC, Dan Richardson. And were the findings sort of on par with what they've been seeing in the industry already?
Yes. So I spoke to Gay earlier today. She said that the findings are similar to what she's seen in market. You know, the consumers are more concerned about how their data is used, but not quite sure either how it's being, you know, kind of used either, if that makes any sense. There's really a need for the industry to be not just transparent, but she did say to be clear around their messaging about how their data is being used. That's been a big struggle, I think, in the past. And she did say that we need to get better in expressing that. She said the statistic that jumped out at her that was a little bit concerning was that 66% of people across the APAC region expect to be able to decline sharing any data without compromising the level of service they received. And that that's really a big opportunity for the industry to really explain what services, media, et cetera, that they're receiving in exchange for their data. And if that data does not exist, a whole lot of ad-supported media and services would disappear. So I think basically what she was saying is we really need to explain that there's definitely an exchange there, but that, you know, if that doesn't occur, then more services will have to be paid for rather than ad-supported. And then Dan Richardson from Yahoo said the quote that stood out for him was that half of Australian Gen Zs are willing to share their data with restaurants in exchange for discounts, 59%, with pharmacies in exchange for health advice, 47%. And this is interesting because marketers are kind of already leading the way through direct personalized channels, as Densu's, you know, research indicates, with respect to fashion and beauty and pharmacies. You know, Richardson was saying the trick will be demonstrating a meaningful value exchange for ad-funded content, giving people a reason to hand over their data. You know, given the current economic climate, high inflation, slow wage growth, the subscription content model is under pressure as people look to consolidate spend. So the ad-funded model is critical to free and open internet. So some really good insight there from some great industry voices.
Yeah, really interesting. The race for data is obviously one that is sort of captivating the industry at the moment. And, you know, we're seeing some brands, as you mentioned, kind of fast food chains like McDonald's and KFC finding interesting ways to sort of, I guess, adapt to the delivery services, but also maintain their first party data. Coming up next, we're going to be chatting to Rod Prosser, Paramount Australia and New Zealand's Chief Sales Officer. Rod Prosser, Paramount Australia and New Zealand Chief Sales Officer, welcome to the Mumbrella Cast.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Cal.
So, Rod, in your view, how do you think things are tracking? Is the network in a better position than it was 1 year ago today?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a great question, Cal. And in our view, our business has changed dramatically in the last 12 months. And continues to go through a fairly significant transformation. Obviously, when the Viacom and CBS businesses came together and recently relaunched as Paramount, that was quite significant. And obviously, our assets diversified fairly quickly. So we're now dealing with a business that has an FTA, an SVOD service, a BVOD service, and of course STV channels, and then all the great brands that sit around Viacom, whether that be Nickelodeon or MTV. So we definitely have much greater breadth and depth in our assets. So therefore, you know, I think we quickly diversify and transform the business, we definitely become a fairly solid entertainment offering, and I think that for us future proofs the business in so many ways, and thankfully we've got that diverse platform now that particularly advertisers are leaning into.
Yeah, well, I was kind of going to ask that. I mean, do you think the Paramount name change has sort of changed the perception of the company within the market at all? Does it sort of streamline things? I know before it was a little bit, you know, 10 Viacom, CBS, maybe there was that perception that it was sort of still Network 10 and then the new international owners.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely brings it all together nicely and cohesively, no question. I think, to be fair, we have a big job ahead of us over the next sort of 3 to 6 months to educate both the market and advertisers and our viewers, what our offering exactly is. we've got a, as I said, a business with great breadth now in terms of the assets that we have. So our ambition is to make sure that those assets are all talking to each other, so the ecosystem is really pumping and working for us. But I think the Paramount name itself says everything, that is the historic nature of that name, which is just an entertainment content powerhouse.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned the different offerings there. How do you think that Paramount's multi-platform offering sort of stacks up compared to maybe its competitors in the Australian market?
Here locally, we are certainly well poised to compete very well against our competitors, and we don't just look at our competitors as the FTR networks. We're very different. Our portfolio is very different. Well, it's unlike any Australian media company at this point. And for us, it's a point of difference. But really importantly, the assets and the platforms need to come together, I should say, in a very distinct way. And I think that's what we're offering the market and our advertisers is a very distinctly different proposition. So I think that we do stand out. We also have the wonderful benefit of being part of a global business that's in over 184 countries, that reaches well over 4 billion people, and really important is in the business of making great content and owning great content. So we're keeping the content pipe really full and delivering consistently into this market. So that's our really great benefit that we have on our side compared to some of our local competitors.
And what's that kind of process been like for you, sort of transitioning your role from being largely a TV network to now being this sort of total media offering company?
It's been a really exciting journey, and I would say that I am pleased to be part of it. And obviously, you know, there's a huge learning curve that you go through. Dealing with an SVOD service that takes advertising within the sport offering and structuring that, setting that up has been an absolute joy, to be honest, because it does give advertisers another opportunity to talk to sometimes hard viewers to get a hold of. So, you know, my role's definitely evolved and changed as the business has evolved and changed. But like as any salesperson would tell you, the more tools in the toolkit that you have to play with, the greater job you can do, I should say, and certainly better outcomes you can get for your clients.
And I guess one of the main sort of transition points for Paramount was last year winning the rights to the A-Leagues, and I guess expanding your football portfolio out of there. You mentioned the unique position you're in where you have that free-to-air partnership with the streaming capabilities. How do you think that first season, which has just wrapped up, how do you think it went? What was your kind of assessment, and what do you think could maybe be tweaked for year two based on the learnings?
First and foremost, we are really proud of what we put to air. Obviously, first year, and you're going to collect a whole heap of lessons on the way through. And for us, there was a lot that we would refine and do differently. But there was also a lot that we would keep and maintain and continue to do. I think the important thing is that we've grown the sport. It's reaching four times the amount of viewers than it was in its previous season. So we're pleased with that. More people are seeing football, whether that be through the SVOD service, whether that be on 10Play, or whether that be on our linear services. So that's a really pleasing outcome. The question around what would we do differently, I think you need to wait till next year, because there'll be plenty that we'll do differently and tweak. As I said, a lot of lessons were learnt. That said, I think the obvious thing to point out is to say that it was such a tricky season for the APL because of the COVID situation, and they were really impacted by that. So they've never seen a season like that. I mean, we had to accelerate the season, we had to stop the season, and that gets tricky and hard to execute on broadcast, obviously. So I think the challenge, we'll never see those challenges again, which will allow us to really consolidate and take those learnings and be able to move forward and create what will be a much better season, give us plenty of runway to market the product, talk about the games, and have some consistency in schedule. That helps broadcast. So that will be something we definitely will definitely have next year. But, you know, look, there's always going to be tweaks, particularly as you go from the first season, and it's a new partnership, and, you know, we really enjoy the partnership that we have with both Football Australia and the APL. They're great partners. We're all willing to lean in and try new things, and I think that's what makes a good partnership.
And I guess in comparison to those other two big codes on, you know, the AFL and NRL, which are sort of protected by the anti-siphoning laws, which I guess mean that a certain amount of games have to be available on free-to-air, would there ever be a consideration to bring more A-League games weekly from behind that paywall, or would that not really fit in with the sort of setup of the deal?
Well, it's a great question, and probably one that we would say we would always leave open. I think this is the wonderful thing about what we have to offer, and this is really partly our point of difference. We have both the SVOD and of course the FTA rights, and we're one business, so we can work with our partners on scheduling, and where it makes sense, of course, we put more games onto 10, or if it made sense, you know, we could reinvent the schedule completely. We're one business, and when you have ownership across those platforms, you get flexibility and the ability to work with the sporting partners to actually execute what will be the best schedule. So we will always be open-minded to any of that, Cal.
Yeah, I think traditionally, it's sort of maybe been the difficulty for football growing in this country is because it's always been behind a paywall, and then, you know, things like ad breaks are maybe more infrequent in football. I know another one of the kind of comments I've seen online during the A-League's coverage on free-to-air was ad breaks during the play, something that's not really traditionally seen elsewhere in the world in football coverage. Would that be something that you would consider dropping in next year's coverage?
We've already made tweaks to that, but look, ultimately we're a commercial business, and therefore we have to operate and behave like a commercial business. If viewers don't want that, then potentially it may all just go back behind a paywall. So, you know, you can blame me for that because I'm a commercial guy, and I like making money off the rights that we acquire, and that was part of it. So. Look, we want to make sure that the viewers get the best experience possible. That's first and foremost. But we are a commercial business that needs to make money off these rights so we can bring all Australians a great coverage.
And then I guess speaking of rights, last night, for me over here in the UK, and this morning for you in Australia, the men's team secured their qualification to the World Cup, which we're all very happy about. And then next year we have the Women's World Cup hosted in Australia. Of course, Australians would be looking for a free-to-air partner for that, seeing as Ten already has a expanding portfolio of football rights. Would there be a consideration or any conversations happening there?
Really wonderful question. This is how I will frame that, and I've said this in the past, and I'll continue to say it, is that as these rights come available, we will look at them very seriously. It makes obvious sense that we would have a serious look at anything that relates to football on the basis that we are the home of football. So, you know, of course, we will look at it, but that will that extends across all rights as they come available. If it makes strategic sense and the sporting code actually fits with the business and our values, because that's really important, because I would suggest that not all sports fit with our business, and we probably mm-hmm. wouldn't go after any sport just because it's sport on that basis. But 100%, we will always take a good look and lean in properly and make sure it's either right or not right for us.
So I guess it's C above for the men's, the forthcoming 2028 or 2026 World Cup for the men's as well then.
100%.
So I guess one of the big talking points in recent weeks and months as well has been another sports rights, the AFL. What's the sort of, I guess, the business strategy behind bidding for the AFL? Does having the A-League also make it maybe a little bit harder?
No, I mean, look, I obviously we won't talk about any of those rights discussions or discussions that might be happening or might not be happening in detail. But, you know, look, I will say this, we've got a multi-platform business that can carry a lot of content. So there's always ways of making sure that the content can be shown and aired for all Australians.
So I guess with moving on to sort of more general coverage, with Pluto on the way, which I know there's still no certain date on, is that right?
No, we don't have a firm date on that. That is 100% correct. Yes, we will wait and see. But certainly excited about the day it does arrive.
Yeah. And I guess Paramount, the overall global network focus, where does, I guess, 10 Play sit right now as a priority for the network?
10 Play is a huge priority. I mean, it obviously is a big part of our future and a big part of the business in the years to come and beyond. So we are doing a lot right now to expand the library. A lot of investment going into content. You'll see some firsts happen fairly soon across the second half around how we structure our library on 10 Play and what we launch on 10 Play. We're having a lot of discussions around what is the future of ad product and ad inventory look like on 10 Play. We're going to make some really great announcements around innovation, ad product innovation in the second half of this year. Unfortunately, I can't give away an awful lot just yet, but we're certainly building out a really robust ad product roadmap, which we're really excited about. And then, of course, there's the UX. You know, we continue to improve the UX by bettering our technology. So we're heavily invested in our BVOD product. And certainly, you know, look, we know it's going to be a big part of our ecosystem, as I keep referring to, in the years to come. And then, of course, you know, the numbers are testament to the investment. It's having its biggest year yet. It's up 23% in 2022. And it's, of course, you know, had some really great uptake, which I've spoken about in the past, in our registered users. So since we've been member gating, we've continued to grow, which has allowed us to grow our data lake and our first party data. It allowed us to engage with great vendors and other data partners. But you know, we're well in excess of 5 million registered active users on 10 Play, which, you know, coming from a start of, you know, very little a few years ago, it's a really pleasing result, and that keeps us highly competitive.
And there was a report earlier this year on, I guess, a proposed combined BVOD marketplace using OzTAM IDs. Was that conversation sort of furthered anywhere? Was there any discussions with other networks or buyers about the prospects of that, I guess, coming into play?
We are always in constant discussions with our with our fellow industry friends around how we best trade collectively. Now, I don't have an update for you on that specific initiative, but I can tell you that it's one that we explored. And, you know, look, we'll be talking to the market fairly soon about what that might look like. Whether we're a part of it or not is you know, yet to be determined. So, yeah, look, it's like all these initiatives are super important, and for us to remain really strong and healthy as an industry in the future, we'll continue to work really closely, particularly with 7 and 9, on many of these initiatives.
And I guess another kind of cross-industry discussion at the moment is the topic over the last few weeks and whether or not to look at ditching overnights for, I guess, a trial period or in the long term. What would be your take on that? Would you back that?
Yeah, look, our position on that is has been quite clearly articulated some years ago, actually, in Mumbrella.
We're
ahead of the curve. Our CEO announced quite some years ago that we were moving away from just reporting on overnights. Obviously, the trade still do, the press still do. We don't internally. We always lead with our the full picture, as I say. So that measurement or that data set is quite familiar within our business because that's how we've been reporting. My view is you don't get the total picture just by looking at the overnights. Obviously, media buyers are still buying and planning on overnights. Not having overnights might impact retail clients and the like that need to move quickly. So we get that it's nuanced. Our business gets that it's nuanced. So it's not as simple as switching it off and switching the other on. You need to probably have a combination of both. I think the reporting part is really key because when we report within the press or the trade one number, you're not seeing the complete picture. And I think that's the important point we've got to make is that it's not moving away from the overnights. It's more about telling the whole story, which will come 7 days later.
So I guess that whole story, how do you think, I guess, that figure now, that total TV figure, how do you think it's stacking up compared to, for example, the true total figures that we were seeing maybe 5 or 10 years ago just on those linear surfaces? Do you think, I guess, the good times will continue for the networks? We're now seeing, I think MasterChef, you know, still winning entertainment, but on a figure that might have been a little bit lower than it was several years ago.
There's definitely no question that audiences are moving around in a television environment. This is my view is that there's no question that viewers aren't consuming SVOD, but they're also consuming BVOD. Many of them are still consuming the linear. Many of them are on the live stream. So it really is for us capturing all of that and being able to present that in a data set. VOZ will go a long way in helping us do that. Mm-hmm. The question to you, I think, around total TV audiences, Australians are watching more television and viewing more content than they ever have. For us as a business, we just want to make sure we are everywhere they are. So that for us means that we need to be broader than just a linear TV service because we know that viewers are moving around. So whether that be a fast service or whether that be on BVOD or, as I said, on SVOD or an FTA channel, we've got to kind of find them, set up some real estate and some platforms around that and target them and feed
the
content.
And around 6 months ago, you mentioned that that linear is still the main breadwinner for the network. Do you think that at all we'll see, I guess, a change in that coming in? I guess, well, of course, as BVOD numbers continue to rise, and do you think that potentially the cost of living, I guess, will maybe call it a crisis, will impact TV investment for marketers at any point?
Well, maybe the cost of living might impact how many SVOD services viewers have. So who knows, the linear might just go up on that basis. look, quite seriously, our view is that the linear is a big part of our business and will continue to be a big part of our business for some time. Therefore, we will continue to invest in such a manner. That's not saying that we won't invest on expanding our library, launching new channels, on digital. But what it does mean is that viewers will continue to get served up great content on Network 10, Bold and Peach, and that's not going to change overnight. And I think that, we will see some flattening of some audiences. I know that viewers are jumping around at the minute and consuming everywhere and anywhere, but I think that will stabilize. And I think the marketers will do what they've always done and find those audiences, and we'll help them, and they'll invest and spend their marketing dollars in that manner. So I'm not concerned that television will necessarily, lose marketing dollars on the basis that our audiences are shifting across into different platforms or consuming content in a different manner.
Yeah, and we mentioned there MasterChef performing well, and then other formats like Have You Been Paying Attention is currently leading things for the network. How do you think the content slate that you announced at last year's Upfront has performed, to date? Has there been anything that surprised you or maybe done better or not as well as expected?
We're pleased with everything that we've launched. I mean, you're going to expect that I would say that. Obviously, Total TV audiences have been softer on the linear, but it's certainly on our BVOD and live streams have accelerated beyond what we would have imagined. But MasterChef continues to deliver. I'll talk about MasterChef first, right? But I think for us, MasterChef continues to deliver a really unique opportunity for advertisers and sponsors. We know the engagement's high. We know the viewers really lean in. And we still are seeing and hearing about great results from our sponsors and partners. It still continues to move stock off shelves. It still continues to drive great results for our supermarket partners. So, the franchise is healthy, and the audiences are just, again, consuming it in different ways. So again, we've got to go back to looking at what does the total picture look like, not just the overnight, and then we evaluate it. In terms of all of our other shows, IAC, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, kicked us off very well. We were pleased with that. We've been pleased with Survivor. We've still been in a cycle of COVID productions, if that makes sense. So we wouldn't necessarily have done IAC and or Survivor here in Australia. They would have been shot overseas. Whilst it was great we could do it here because it made it a lot easier for us to get product into the shows, which I love. But it may not have been the way we would have normally done it. So that'll go back to what next year will go back to what will be a normal year for us. But I think the one thing, if I can say one thing that has been a big lesson for us and something that's become, I think, a reality is that whilst all these franchises that we've just spoken about are super important to our schedule, Australians are demanding fresh content.
Yeah.
We know that and we've got some research to support that, but we know that Aussies want new and fresh content. That's why we've seen The Doghouse as a great example. It's been a great success for us. Cheap Seats, another great success for us. Both new formats or new shows. But of course, we've got to keep the great franchises alive across the schedule and continue to pepper the format with new shows. So the back half for us is super exciting in terms of new formats. Hunted is going to be epic, absolutely amazing format, and has we're just starting to promo now, coming straight after Survivor. And Traders is another great one. And of course, we've got, you know, sort of the, some fresh returning. And then we move into next year, and there's some great new shows, which you're going to have to wait to upfronts to hear about. But again,
nothing you can announce here.
No, I want to keep my job. No, I can't. But I can assure you the volume of new programs that you're going to see across the second half will then be replicated in the first half of next year too. So we are serving up to Aussies new and fresh formats. I would like to say every single one of them will work, but, you know, look, that's just the math sometimes doesn't work that way. But the stuff that I'm seeing coming through, like the real Love Boat, Australia. I mean, that is going to be so much fun. It's already getting a stack of attention. It's a co-production with our CBS sister company in the US. So really great production values. Going to be really fun and interesting and new format. So there's a lot of good stuff coming second half. We're really excited. Our guys have been in the market talking about the half and the content and the format. And the market reaction has been overwhelmingly positive, simply because it's fresh and new.
Just finally, Rob, we are in, I guess, presently in Pride Month, which gets a particular focus in this industry every year from brands and such. Paramount, and in its previous incarnations, has always kind of pushed diversity, maybe a little bit more than some of the other networks. What is it about it makes it so important to Paramount, and I guess in the makeup of the company?
Yeah, well, look, it's always been important to us as a business, whether that was us as a business of Network 10, whether that be Network 10 CBS, or whether that be Viacom CBS, and obviously now Paramount. It's always been here locally an important agenda, always been a big part of our values. And the great thing is I've been fortunate to see it come to life in a whole raft of initiatives. You know, I think that the most exciting thing that we've done over the last couple of years is really embrace our RAP plan and how we've rolled that out across the business has been quite heartwarming. So, look, it is really incredibly important to us here locally. The upside for us is that we've got a global business. That it is equally important to and has a really strong body that sits around DE&I, and we get a lot of initiatives rolled in down here locally that are supported globally, which allows our teams to really lean in and embrace a whole raft of different initiatives and or causes, and I think that for us is a big part of the business, but really importantly gives a lot of people within the business a sense of belonging. So you come into Channel 10 and you feel like you're part of something. Now you come into Paramount, you feel like you're part of something bigger. So I think you can talk to any one of our staff around DE&I, and they'll tell you how important it is to the business. But, you know, we actually, I always say this, it's really easy to do the talk. It's a little harder to do the walk, and clearly it's a topic that everyone's talking about, and I hope every business gets their act together, but you really have to lean in as a business. So I can confidently say we might do a lot of talk, but we are doing a lot of walk as well.
Yeah. And does that conversation, I guess, continue to extend upon, I guess, on-screen talent and things like that as well?
Yeah, this is, and that's really important. I think it's one thing to have the internal rigor and structure around diversity, and it's another thing to actually portray that on the screen, both in front and behind. And, you know, we have been great ambassadors of representing all Australians. And, you know, sometimes we've been criticised in the press around some of the decisions that we've made in terms of whether that be casting or whether that be, you know, a structured show. It doesn't matter. So you just got to keep, you know, moving forward and plough ahead because every Australian deserves the right to be represented on our screen. And the fact of the matter is, sadly, you know, well over 35% of Australians still don't feel like they're reflected on screen. So we've all got a big job to do, and it sits on all of our shoulders to make sure that all of Australia is represented, and in a meaningful way, not just in a tokenistic way.
Yeah. Well, Rod, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today.
Cal, it was a pleasure. I look forward to catching up soon.
And that is everything for today on the Mumbrella Cast. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you're catching these podcasts and head to mumbrella.com.au for more content and updates. Emma, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Cal, and all the best in Cannes. Cannot wait to see some incredible content from us.
Love a little pun there. And Kalila, thank you very much as well.
Thank you. Hope you have fun over in Europe and London.
And thanks to Rod for joining us. See you next week.